Welcome to Mommy Heal Thyself. We feature guests who provide you with the tools, resources, and strategies you need to say no to a life of pain and suffering from all forms of preventable disease, toxic drugs, and unnecessary surgeries. We hope to inspire you to boldly reclaim your ability to heal and to serve the ones you love.
Welcome once again to another episode of Mommy Heal Thyself. Today, I introduce to you Deborah Grassman. Deborah is the author of three books, Peace at Last, Hero Within, and Soul Injury, a contributing author for four textbooks and has 25 published articles. There are four documentary films and a TED Talk that feature her work. However, none of these achievements has taught her as much as the 10,000 dying veterans she took care of as a VA hospice nurse practitioner for over 30 years. If anyone wants to learn how to achieve inner peace, ask a veteran who has successfully struggled to find it for the rest of their lives after they returned from war. The lessons that she learned culminated into a concept known as soul injury, a wound that separates a person from their own sense of self. Deborah now provides presentations and workshops that can help anyone recover his or her loss of self-worth by healing the relationship they have had with themselves. So, Deborah, thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you so much for wanting to hear about soul injury and about helping people, especially women, heal the relationship they have with themselves. So thank you, thank you, thank you for the work that you do.
Absolutely. Now, before we get down that particular rabbit hole, I would love to know more about how you came to be placed on this path. What was your journey?
Well, it was really a very unexpected path. When I graduated from nursing school, I was about 31 years old, and I went to work for the VA to become a nurse, you know, very idealistic. Florence Nightingale, I'm going to save these veterans from the trauma that they've experienced, those kinds of things. Very arrogant. I knew everything. And so probably for the first 10 years of my VA career, I spent really unlearning what I thought I knew. And, you know, I'm sort of embarrassed to tell you that for the first 10 years of my VA career, I actually harbored a prejudice against Vietnam vets. Yeah, my thinking sort of went like this. You know, the war was over a long time ago. They just need to get over it. They just need to put it behind them. And what's with all the long hair and tattoos, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then one day our VA was doing a call for veterans artwork from throughout the whole state of Florida. And I'm going through this display of hundreds of veterans artwork on that day. And suddenly I was stopped in my tracks when I saw this one painting by clearly a Vietnam veteran. And it was a soldier's face, and reflecting in the pupil of the eye was this burning hut with people dying. And you know, sometimes your soul has to reach out and grab you because when you're just not getting it, so to speak. And it just stopped me in my tracks. Suddenly I saw what that soldier saw. But more important, in the painting, he was crying, but he wasn't crying tears like regular. They were tears of blood. You see, the loss of vitality. And see, that's when my eyes were opened. So, you know, we all have prejudices, right? If we think we don't have any, that's the real problem, because we have this human brain acts as a filter, and it's about bringing that filter out of the dark into the light so we can see how it is impacting our relationships. So when you say, how did I arrive at this point? I have to say, if that moment hadn't happened to wake me up to see the prejudices that I was holding, I would have continued to judge and keep my arrogance toward helping veterans, and I would not have unlearned all the things that were keeping me separated from them. And so really, when I talk about our ultimate goal is to help people heal the relationship they have with themselves and to make peace with all these different scattered pieces of self. I learned that from veterans who were dying. I was a hospice nurse practitioner. And the irony, the real irony is that I learned about how to achieve personal peace from people who had gone to war. I mean, so that's the kind of their ultimate test, so to speak. So I've learned it from the best teachers, and that is dying veterans. And there was a veteran one time when we were helping him come to peace with all the turmoil that had been in his life. And he said, "Why did I have to be dying in order to learn how to do this?" And I was like, "Wow." Because dying people are fertile ground for healing. Everything changes when you're given a terminal diagnosis. So I got to bear witness to these kinds of phenomena every day, every single day. And but anyway, it was that man, his name was Mr. Myers. It was that man who stunned me into realizing this, what I was learning from dying veterans was applicable to all of us. And it was a message about how to have inner peace. And so, when I retired from the VA, in fact, we had several of us that retired at the same time to bring the message to people who were not dying and people who were not veterans. And so we spent 10 years researching all of the tools, the self-help tools and what have you, to see if it was applicable to the broader population. And absolutely, we have, it has been confirmed and validated that it is.
It's interesting that you bring up the importance of us recognizing our own biases, because I remember when I was younger and I had a friend who was in the military at that time, and I said, "You know what? I can't have anything to do with you because I just don't understand this whole thing of war, and you're fighting for this corrupt US government. And if worse came to worse and we were on opposite sides of the fence, I would just have to shoot you." I think about that now, and it's like God has designed my path to wake me up to the awareness of how limited that perspective was. And there's so many different types of discrimination that we still have to this day against our veterans who went into wars that are quote unquote not popular, let's put it that way. And we're taking that resentment out on the veterans who went into these situations out of a desire to protect, a desire to uphold justice and truth and everything right. And wow. It's amazing, just amazing. Now,
What happened a lot of times when I was witnessing their stories, their military stories, they often talked about soul injury. And, at first I thought they were just basically talking about PTSD and the trauma and what have you. But, so many of them, when you come to the end of your life and you're looking back over your life, you look all the way back at people's childhood stories. So the injury, the wound was often very much there prior to going into the military. And on their deathbed decades later, there it is still there. So when we talk about why did I have to be dying in order to learn how to do this, it becomes even more pressing for this message about soul injury. And it's just crazy that we don't have a term for becoming separated from your own sense of self, because it's everywhere. Almost everybody has had that type of experience where you've been, where shame, I always say unmourned loss and hurt, unforgiven guilt and shame, and fear of helplessness and loss of control. Those are the things that separate us from our own sense of self. And we have a name for it now. It's called a soul injury. And, it's not we don't need to pathologize it. We don't need to diagnose it, but we do need, we can't do anything about it until we have a name for it and a way to identify it and a way to respond to it. So that's really what Opus Peace, our nonprofit, is about how do you identify soul injury? We have an inventory for that. How do you respond to it? And how do you help? How can this help heal a hurting world? We have a hurt. All of us are hurting in one way or the other. And for many people, that hurt, that wound clouds our ability to see ourselves, to feel the self-worth that we have. So that's really, you mentioned the soul injury book that just came out. That's really what it's about. It's a map, really, for how to identify soul injury within ourselves, to provide self-help tools, to instead of trying to be more, be better. Oh, you just need to be more resilient, right? You just be your best self. Be the best version of yourself. And I'm not saying that that's not true, but what is real within you is also the worst version. You have a worst version also. That's real too. Get to know your worst version, not only your best version. And everything in between, the good, the bad, the ugly, the beautiful. It's all there. You have to get to know and welcome all those different pieces and rehome them. And rehome them. And when we only focus on, oh, be the best version of yourself, then we're feeling guilty or ashamed of all these other versions that we stuff in our unconscious because we don't want to think that we could have that. That's why when I start out talking about our own prejudices, if we want to pretend like we have, oh, I have no prejudices. Well, guess what? Guess where those prejudices are? They're stuck over here in the unconscious, and they will come out in other ways that you don't recognize because you're not being mindful about them.
Absolutely. It's a process that I often refer to as the three A's: awareness, acceptance, and appreciation. So I would love for you to tell us a little bit more about exactly what is soul injury and how can we identify soul injury in ourselves and in our loved ones.
Well, I would say the first thing is what you really said is identifying it within ourselves, because how can you help others heal their lives if we are oblivious and really aware, accepting, and appreciating those wounds that are inside ourselves? So, I mean, when I talk about when I was a new nurse at age 31, and I'm out to heal, fix the world. How can you help others heal their anger, their fears, their shame, their helplessness, if we don't know how to do that within ourselves? So absolutely, it starts within. So again, we have an inventory. It's right on our website, opuspeace.org, OPUSPEACE,
Yes. And we will have
opuspeace.org.
That link in the show notes. So don't worry, anybody, it will be in the show notes.
So again, if you think about nature is a great metaphor for us as human beings. And if you think about the sun, and when on a cloudy day, the clouds obscure the sun, and trying to make that sun stronger, more resilient, more forceful isn't going to do a thing for getting to you, right? So our tools focus on removing what's clouding your own soul, the energy of your soul. And I love, if you look up the definition of soul in the dictionary, one of the definitions is it is your total self, not just your best self, not just your saintly part. It includes, all of it, your total self, good, bad, ugly, and everything in between. So any rate, what I was going to say is the three barriers that separate people from themselves is the unmourned loss and hurt. It's not loss and hurt. It's unmourned loss and hurt. That's the culprit that we exile into unconsciousness. And then what do? Well, we don't want to feel that. So what do? We use numbing agents to not feel who we are, to not be real with ourselves. So in a lot of ways, it's all about becoming real with ourselves, knowing who we are, which is exactly what you said with your three A's, knowing who we are. So as we learn how to mourn, learn how, then we don't have to numb out stuff. And numbing isn't just drugs and alcohol. You know, you can numb with workaholism, chasing perfectionism, you know, all these other things, and you end up with an imitate with distractions, and you end up with an imitation life. You end up with a false self. So, any rate, and as I said, unforgiven, guilt, and shame. Shame. There's nothing like shame to convince you that you shouldn't be who you are, that you have no self-worth, right? That you're not good enough. So shame, you know, at the core of many soul injuries is this sense of I'm not good enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm not pretty enough. I'm not, you know, just not enoughness, that type of thing. So it's uncovering that and bringing it out in the open. You know, so many times there's so many schools of thoughts, philosophies, counseling, you know, even in my nursing education, you know, if someone brings up shame, what do we as counselors often say? Oh, you shouldn't feel ashamed about that. Well, you know, shame is present in all of us. Isn't it better to bring it out in the light so we can, let's talk about it. We all have it, you know, instead of stuffing it away and pretending like we don't. And then the third cause of soul injury is fear of helplessness and loss of control. And to me, this is one of the most ignored thing. You know, children are helpless. They are at the mercy of their parents. And a lot of wounding that happens in childhood, that residue remains with a person for their entire life if they don't bring consciousness to it. And what it really is that when they're so helpless, and then they don't want, as they grow up, they don't want to feel that helplessness again. So there's a lot of numbing agents used to avoid feeling helpless again. I'm going to control everything. And of course, that's a problem when you're trying to control something that's uncontrollable. And,
So what have you found is the most common misperception or mistake that people make in terms of how they approach what we are now referring to as soul injury?
I'll give you a very practical example. I was in a Walmart not too long ago, and there was a woman, she had a t-shirt on. And this is what the t-shirt said. I'm a bitch. If you don't like it, stay away. I did. I had to giggle, and I give that woman credit. So here's what I think her t-shirt should have said. She should have said, I'm a hurting woman who is angry and afraid of the world. See, that would have been real. So when you say what's the biggest mistake, I would say we all have facades, and we need facades in untrustworthy environment. You don't want to be your real self in an untrustworthy environment. That'll come back to but the mistake when you say that is when you think that you are the facade. When you mistake your facade, oh, you know, this woman wearing this t-shirt, basically, and this is conjecture, obviously, on my part. She was like, this is who I am. If you know, I mean, that's what it said. This is who I am. If you don't like it, stay away. Yeah, that's not who you are. This is a facade that I need because I'm a hurting and angry woman. And, you know, so it's not about removing facades. It's about bringing consciousness to the facade so that you don't delude yourself. You don't have the illusion yourself that that's who you are. That's how you end up with a counterfeit life then.
Exactly. So now, what is something that you have found has influenced you to help you to come more to an awareness, not only of soul injury, but how to help others and yourself to heal from soul injury?
Well, we live in a society that is blatantly afraid of emotional pain. blatantly.
We're told we shouldn't have the pain, you know, that there's something wrong with us and we have to take a drug to numb ourselves of it if we have that pain.
And we should be able to rise above it and put a happy smile on no matter what. When you run into someone who's frowning or feeling down for really being real with whatever they're experiencing, and what do people say? Well, where's that smile today? And it's
Turn
like,
that frown upside down.
I mean, there's all these messages that, to where we're afraid of emotional pain. And of course, I was the same way. I grew up in this society. Well, I'll tell you my little lassie story. And you can appreciate I'm a little embarrassed to even say it because it seems so trivial compared to what I've witnessed on veterans' deathbeds. But when I was 5 years old, I was watching Lassie on TV. I was sure she was going to die, and I'm crying. And my dad walks through the room and he sees my tears and he starts laughing at me.
Oh, no.
I made a 5-year-old decision that day
I'm
to
tough.
never, never cry again. There must be something wrong. So, what happened? So, I want to tell you, I did not cry a tear for 30 years after that day. 30 years. I became ashamed of the Deborah that was hurting, the Deborah that was sad. I stuffed her, I exiled her. And it wasn't until 30 years later where I was dealing with something painful. And out of the blue, luckily, my soul, something within me said, "What if your fear of your pain is worse than if you just felt it?" And I cried for the first time in 30 years. I still remember where I was standing that day, and that was when my unfreezing began. That's when I started becoming real. So if you look at the heart of any wound, whether it's shame, hurt, helplessness, whatever, there is fear of emotional pain. That's at the heart. So when you say what's at the core of our interventions and what have you, it's helping people release their fear of emotional pain so they can get real with whatever they're feeling. And but if you're talking about wounds, whether you like it or not, there's going to be some unmourned hurt there. That's what kind of meets the definition of a wound. So you want to bring consciousness to it, and the way you bring consciousness to it. And the research is really clear. I don't know if you're familiar with the book, The Body Keeps the Score by Bessel van der Kolk. He's
Absolutely,
one of those,
absolutely.
leading researchers, but he is really clear in his book that it's not enough to talk about your feelings. You have to
Absolutely.
feel your feelings. It's not enough. It's good to talk about and externalize, the emotional pain and the wound. That's good. I'm not saying that's not helpful. It absolutely is. It makes it conscious. But you can't heal what you don't feel. So if it doesn't, good that it comes here, but you've got to move it down to here, and then you've got to integrate it to bring it down to your gut, to where you
Got to
can dwell,
digest it.
digest it exactly. You have to eat your shadow, as Carl Jung would put it.
Exactly. It's such a powerful message that unfortunately in our culture we're told that emotions are wrong, emotions are bad, as opposed to saying it's about being stuck and not digesting it. So it's like having constipation, emotional constipation. That's what's killing us, as opposed to digesting it, allowing it to work through the body, allowing it to work through our
Yes,
soul,
yes.
and releasing what no longer serves us and absorbing and integrating the lessons that can help us to move to the next part of our journey. Ah.
The other thing I would say, in addition to feeling our feelings like van der Kolk encourages, I would say we also kind of take it one step further, and that is there is a part of self that is holding that feeling for you, waiting for you to acknowledge it, to accept it, to acknowledge it, to appreciate it. So it's not enough. I'm going to say it's not, as Vanderkolk says, it's not enough to talk about feelings. We have to feel them. And I'm going to say it's great to feel your feelings and ventilate your feelings, but that's not enough either. You have to re-own and rehome the part of self that is holding those feelings for you.
Exactly.
And
Exactly.
That's the model that we use, is more these scattered pieces of self that we've disconnected from. And we have very simple, straightforward tools, self-help tools, to help acknowledge the part of self that's holding the feeling. So yes, it's acknowledging feeling, it's feeling it, but then it's, okay, what about this scattered piece of self that's sitting there holding this feeling for you in your unconscious? Now that you've made it conscious, let's bring that part of self home. And certainly, women have been, especially older women, I will say, I was raised, with the women's livers, so to speak, but, we were not, there was a lot of sense of women were not as valued, and, our self-worth, those types of things, and kind of feeling helpless and powerless in some ways. So at any rate, being able to go back and acknowledge that part of self that was raised in that kind of culture, whether it be women, minority, whether it be, a lot in the book that I talk about is any marginalized population more than likely is going to have a soul injury because of the messages that society sends to it, and some messages more deep than others. But again, being able to bring consciousness to that part of self holding it is also important, not just feeling it, not just, acknowledging it. Those are important steps, don't get me wrong. But that final step is what does the final integration. And we don't talk enough about that how to bring home that scattered piece of self that's holding the feeling. Because we need to talk about integration, not just rising above something. Rising above something, sometimes it's a great way to say suppress it.
Yeah. And in reality, the only way to heal is to have that reintegration, So anything less than that will, in a way of speaking, allow the wound to continue.
Yeah, you're so right. You are so right.
And I think it's the other part of your message that is so important to me is the fact that this is not relegated to any one group of people. Any person that you can think of that is out there, you would be surprised as to the soul injuries that that person may have. You may look at someone and say, oh, he or she has it all together. They never had anything rough in their life, da, 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 da. But you have no clue as to whether or not that person has had an experience that he or she has interpreted in a certain manner that has led to this soul injury, this separateness from the core of yourself. Ah, well.
I remember a therapist saying to me one time, no one escapes this world unscathed. If you're in this world, you're going to be scathed in some way. So we all have wounds, and it's about bringing consciousness to those wounds so that we can be healed. I also remember there's someone that had said it's an anonymous thing that I saw, but it just so resonated with me is, it was this: I can't heal because I couldn't heal because I kept pretending I didn't hurt. I think that's a beautiful quote.
It
I
is.
couldn't heal because I kept pretending that I didn't hurt.
So Deborah, tell us as we wrap up for today, tell us how people can access Opus Peace. What are some of the supports and resources that you have available so that people can take this to the next part of the journey for themselves and for the ones that they love?
Well, definitely the Soul Injury book. So it's entitled Soul Injury: Healing the Relationship You Have with Yourself. It has all of the concepts, all of the tools, all of the self-awareness exercises available in it, and it's designed to be used. People can actually do book communities, to learn. I mean, there's nothing like building a small community where you go through it together. I mean, that really breeds belonging. It encourages, when the word encouraged, give courage to each other to do the inner journey and discover yourself, to inhabit yourself more completely. So I obviously that would be a big one. The other one, we have put all of our courses online in what we call Masterpiece, and the first lesson of every course, and we have them on multiple topics, including sexual violence, for example, which 50% of women have experienced. But we have
And
multiple
men,
a third
many people, yeah.
a third of men have experienced it as well, and people don't realize that it's so prevalent with men. And we have a lot of stories of men actually telling their story in that course. But we have a lot of other topics as well on forgiveness, on shame, on soul injury, multiple topics. And as I said, I would encourage people just to peruse the all of them and put the free play all the free ones, just to see. It kind of gives you an introduction into each course. And we've made our one of our goals too is to have everything very affordable, so that anybody can use it and access it and share it with others.
Absolutely. Well, my dear Deborah, thank you so very, very much for being with us today. And before we leave, is there one last word of inspiration or thought that you would like to leave our audience with?
Well, I think as you're saying it, I will leave the audience with what we kind of opened up with. I'm going to read to you the very first paragraph out of the book Soul Injury, and I think it kind of sums up and brings it full circle. So here's what I wrote. Everything I've learned that has really mattered, I learned from the dying. Perspectives shift dramatically as death approaches. The day before you're given a terminal diagnosis, you take your life for granted. The day after, you wake up. Things you thought were so important now seem insignificant. And things that had been escaping your attention suddenly thrust themselves forward with an urgency to complete. That is the gift that death is. Just the threat of it awakens you to what is important and what is not. These revelations can be as tumultuous as an earthquake, or as quiet and penetrating as a gentle snow that visited you overnight. But the stark realization causing the reverberation is the same. You are struck with the abrupt realization of how your life matters and how you matter.
Thank you so very much for that message. Well, ladies, until next time, peace and blessings.
Thank you for tuning in for this episode of Mommy Heal Thyself. If you like what we're doing here, please share, subscribe, like us, and leave a comment. Your feedback is very much appreciated.